This far, we have seen so-called fluid methods, which works as a deformation of a continuous function. You have, for example, the advection equation, advecting a pulse in space. Or you have the diffusion equation, which acts on the pulse to smear it out. Now we'll go on to a different kind of method using particles. And we will find out that we can represent these kind of phenomena with the help of particles. Both the advection process by advecting particles, and we shall see that if we let the particles do random walks, we'll reproduce a diffusion process. The Monte Carlo method is in general any numerical method involving random numbers. And the name, of course, stems from the city of Monte Carlo with its stochastic processes occurring in the casino, of course. However, in physics, Monte Carlo methods are most often done to evaluate integrals. If you want to estimate the value of an integral, a one-dimensional integral, you would probably, as a first approximation, divide your space into equidistant mesh, evaluate your integrand over this mesh, and make a summation over the integrand evaluation. In Monte Carlo method, we do a little bit differently. We choose the mesh points randomly, and we do the similar summation over the function evaluation at the mesh point. And this is for low dimensions, this is actually a very inefficient way to calculate integrals. However, if we go to many dimensions, we'll find that this has quite a good convergence, and it's actually used especially in high energy physics, where they often have multidimensional integral problems. The aim here is, of course, to solve partial differential equation using Monte Carlo methods. But before we do that, we should look into some of the stochastic theory underlying these numerical methods. If we have a stochastic variable, we need to measure it somehow. And we do this by introducing the expected value and the variance of the stochastic variable. And this we do in terms of its probability density. Further, we introduce some of the most important types of stochastic variables in this part of the course, and that is the normally distributed variables, which has a probability density with this kind of bell-like shape. They are centered around its mean value and have a width that is equal to the standard deviation, which of course is the square root of the variance of the stochastic variable. Secondly, we introduce the set of uniformly random numbers. And these are defined on an interval and have an equal probability in this interval and zero probability of occurring outside. Next, we shall discuss stochastic processes. And a stochastic process is a stochastic variable that evolves in time. And the stochastic process that is of most interest to us is the Wiener process. The Wiener process is defined by two properties. First of all, if we have a Wiener process and we let it evolve in time, the change of the Wiener process during this time step, called the Wiener increment. The Wiener increment is normally distributed with zero mean and a variance equal to this time step. The second property of the Wiener process is that this Wiener increment is statistically independent of the Wiener process as the initial time. and this introduces a preferred direction of the Wiener process. It is not reversible in time. You cannot start at a later point in time and take a time step backwards. This, of course, introduces similarity between the Wiener process and the diffusion equation, which also is irreversible in time. Further, if we look at the probability density of the Wiener process, it's normally distributed, and the variance is proportional to the time step. So if we start at small time steps, we will have a very narrow probability density distribution, and if as the time step increase, this probability density will be smeared out, just like a diffusion process. And that is, of course, why we are interested in looking at the Wiener process. Now, we're ready to introduce a calculus of stochastic processes called the Itô calculus. This calculus has some very different properties than ordinary Riemann calculus. And these properties originate from the preferred direction of time that we just introduced in the Wiener processes. We will start off with introducing the Itô integral. The Itô integral looks more or less like an ordinary integral. However, if we do a time integration, we usually have a small time differential in the integration. Here, we have a small Wiener differential. That is a stochastic differential, an infinitely small random number. This might be confusing, but we shall see later how this differential can be factorized into a random part and a differential part. Further, this discretization has always to be in an explicit manner. That is, it has to be in the limit of a forward Euler. And this is denoted by a circle in front of the differential. If we now construct a property which we call capital Y, which is a sum of an ordinary Riemann integral and a stochastic Itô integral. And then let the integration be over infinitely short time. Then, if our integrands are regular, we can simplify by assuming that the integrands are constant during the integration, and we obtain a so-called stochastic differential equation. Such a stochastic differential equation states that the change of our property y is given by one term proportional to the size of the time step, and one term that is proportional to a Wiener increment. The term proportional to the time step is, of course, deterministic, so it will just be a displacement. The second term is stochastic. It will be like flipping a coin. It could either go this way, that way, that way, anywhere. And what we obtain is a probability density of the outcome. So we have some kind of smooth probability density here of where we will end up after this time step. This stochastic differential equation can be simplified by removing the stochastic part, and then we obtain an ordinary differential equation. So this allows us to picture a stochastic differential as a generalization of or extension of an ODE, an ordinary differential equation. Next, we shall discuss particle orbits. You know, for a Monte Carlo method, we have to use particles. So, as you remember from the discretization chapter, a particle is defined by three properties. its weight, its shape function. Example, for a molecule, it could have any shape, and by its position. We shall here make some simplification. We should let the weight be 1. We should let the shape be a Dirac pulse. And thereby, we will have very narrow spike, or even very localized in space. And all we need to find out is the particle position. And the particle position could then be, in general, a function of the time. And as it evolves in time, we produce a particle orbit, as we call it. A particle orbit could be described by an ordinary differential equation. As we have, for example, in mechanics, the time derivative of the position is equal to the velocity. Such an equation can be discretized either in an implicit or an explicit manner, and then solved numerically. If we now do that for a large number of particles, we could construct a so-called density function. Actually, it is not quite a function in this case, as we have a particle shape that is a delta function, or a delta spike, so it's infinitely high and infinitely thin, and thereby it's not really suitable for plotting. So we have to do some smoothing out, some filtering of this function. This could be efficiently be done by projection of the sum of delta of Dirac pulses onto a finite element basis, or a root top functions. This is what is done in the J-bone applet. And if you look now at the first applet, you'll see one particle in red, and also its projection to a finite element rooftop base in black. If you push start, you will see how the particle moves according with a constant velocity towards the right. You can also see how the projection onto the rooftop basis changes, and that the particle is projected to two rooftop functions at a time. If we go on to look at the next applet, we have introduced a large number of particles instead, and tried to reproduce a box function using these particles. As you see, the box function is very ill represented by particles, of course. Actually, the density function here in black doesn't at all look like a box function. But anyway, it's as close we come with this number of particles, and if we increase the number of particles, we'll get closer and closer to the box function. You can now evolve each particle according to this ordinary differential equation with a constant velocity by pressing start. As you see, these particles will transport the density function perfectly in space. And this is, of course, what we usually call an advection process. And it is actually a perfect solution to the advection equation. And this is stated in the Taylor transport theorem, which says that if we have a very large number of particles, and we let each particle evolve according to an ordinary differential equation with a velocity v, then this corresponds to an advection equation for its density function, with the advection parameter being the velocity. This allows us to simulate any advection equation using particles. Using a large number of particles, we could simulate any advection equation. Now we're ready to introduce stochastic particle orbits. And a stochastic particle orbit can be described by a stochastic differential equation. A way to interpret such an orbit, we could picture a snowflake. At least in Sweden, we have lots of snowflakes, and sometimes they're very big, and you can see them actually falling slowly from the sky. And they have often this irregular motion that is impossible to predict. Of course, we can predict that it's falling downwards, and this is a deterministic motion. This is the first term in the stochastic differential equation that is proportional to the time step. But it also has a component in the longitudinal plane, which is very irregular. And this is the second term in the stochastic differential equation, proportional to the Wiener increment. You can now have another example of a stochastic orbit by looking at your applet. If you have there one particle which now follows a Monte Carlo scheme, which we will present in more detail later. However, it represents zero velocity, mean velocity that is, but it has some part of this stochastic term. So if you now press start, you will see how the particle very irregularly moves around. And to predict from one time step to the other where it's going to go, it's impossible, of course, since the time stepping is produced by a pseudo-random net generator. And now we should make some more mathematical step that takes us towards equivalence between such a random walk and a diffusion process. If we analyze the stochastic differential equation and take the time derivative of the expected value of the position, as well as the time derivative of the variance of the particle position, this will be done in exercise 5.2, and the result is given in your notes. An alternative way to study these properties is to picture another stochastic process, which we define by the evolution of its probability density distribution. We state that this stochastic process, its probability density distribution evolves with the advection diffusion equation. If we now start with the delta pulse, we will see that the time derivative of the expected value of this stochastic variable could be expressed in terms of advection and diffusion coefficient for the advection diffusion equation, and similarly for the time derivative of the variance. So here we have obtained two ways to describe the time evolution of these measures. And this gives an indication of what the correspondence is between the stochastic differential equation and the advection diffusion equation. And this could be done, and this could be expanded to prove a theorem called the Feynman-Kac theorem that states that if we have a very large number of particles and we evolve every particle according to a stochastic differential equation, then this corresponds to evolving the probability density or the density function of these particles according to the advection diffusion equation. This, of course, allows us to solve the advection diffusion equation using a large number of particles and evolve each of them according to a stochastic differential equation. You need to solve partially.
Hello, now we will talk about how you would implement a Monte Carlo scheme in a computer, in your numerical simulation. And while looking at your lecture notes, you will see that you now have a formulation for the explicit time stepping of a Monte Carlo function of a stochastic differential equation. Now the magic step is to translate the time differentiation of the Wiener process into something which you can generate with a computer. And this we will do by taking a random number with zero mean value and one invariance and multiply it by square root of t. You can convince yourself of that this will be the right distribution by just going through the definition of the variance. Given this, you will see that you have a very simple numerical scheme just to implement. You will have the value of the particle will be the value at time t plus v, which is the velocity of the particle times delta t plus random number times the diffusion coefficient times the square root of t, of delta t, of course. Or if you use another formulation, you'll see that you have another formula involving the time derivative of the expectation value plus random number times the square root of the time derivative of the variance times square root of delta t. And I want you to look how this is implemented in the JBON comp. This is very straightforward. You can follow the loop of the particles, and you will see how you take the particle position is equal to the particle position plus the velocity times the time step plus random Gaussian number plus the root, as you see. Otherwise, under it you have the periodic boundary conditions, which are not shown, because they're part of the exercises. So, if you press start on the applet, we will now see an example of how an advection diffusion will look like for a Monte Carlo method. And as you see, and as we said before, it's fairly noisy for one-dimensional problems, but it could be good anyway, which due to the boundary conditions. This I will come back to. Now, most programming languages do not have normally distributed random numbers. So how should you do them? And you should use the Box-Miller method, which is a simple algorithm taking uniformly distributed random numbers between 0 and 1, which are available in almost all computer languages. Then you use this simple formula and you get two normally distributed random numbers which are independent. And now, don't waste random number 2, even if you just need one for the time being, because random numbers are expensive and you should be precious about them. You only have a finite sequence of random numbers which the computer will take. So after you've gone through all the sequence, you will return and it will start over. And also beware how good your random numbers are. Most default random number generators are fairly crappy, so you should use DRAND48, for example, in C, which is a non-linear random number generator. So let's concretely look what time differentiation is about. If I move my hand like this, it will look smoothly. Hopefully, it depends on how much we will compress this, of course, but hopefully it will be smoothly. But if you run it in slow motion, will see my hand is moving like this, actually. Because what you're looking at now is time discretized with 25 frames per second, which is 50 fields per second. And now, if you look at the movement of my hand like this, you will be able to tell where will my hand be next in the next time step. And this is because this is a deterministic motion. So this would be the advection term. Now, if I would do like this with my hand, that would be diffusion. And then the time discretization would be here. You don't know really where is the hand going in the next time step. And this is where the random numbers comes in. Now pretend my hand is a slow snowflake falling down, like this. What you see is superposition of the deterministic motion downwards. This is the advection term. And superposed, we will have sideways motion, which will be the Wiener process, which is the random motion. Now to simulate this random motion, we use random numbers to describe and emulate this. So what you will see is one time step, then we'll take a random number, move the hand to a random position, and so on. By this we will be able to describe something which is similar to the random slowdown, random fall down by snowflake. So let's turn to an example and see how we can do this concretely. And by this we will look at the 1D diffusion equation. And now you should note that this is intrinsically not a particle problem. Heat is generally not described by particles but by fluid temperature distribution. But we could use pseudo particles anyway in order just to simulate the distribution function. And late at the end of the simulation we will map it as is seen in the discretization section to a fluid distribution. We start by looking at the heat equation, and we take initial condition, which will be the box like this. Then we will formulate our stochastic differential equation, and from there we could go either by calculating the time derivative of the variance and excitation value, or we could use Feynman CAC directly, which is by my standards the easiest way, but that's a matter of opinion. And we will get an explicit scheme where we have just time at position at time t is equal to the position at the old time plus the random number times square root to 2 times the diffusion coefficient times square root of t. Now we'll initialize the particles, the good algorithm. We'll use the Box-Miller method to get the random numbers if you're not using Java, which has it by default. And then we have to step through the particles and evolve them, the number of time points we want to use. And then afterward we will visualize the solution by projecting it to a rooftop basis. When should we use Monte Carlo methods? There is no golden rule of when you should use which methods. It's really a matter of the problem, it's a matter of what computer hardware you have available, the time you have available for implementation, and so on. But you could have some guidelines. If you look at the convergence, the Monte Carlo simulations will converge as square root of n, where n is the number of particles. If you go to finite element and finite differences, we'll see that the convergence is proportional to n times the order of the problem divided by the dimension of the problems. So for first order finite difference and finite element scheme, we will have the same scaling in two dimensions as the Monte Carlo method. Now it should be noted that this is only a scaling, which is how the solution will behave when you go to infinite number of particles or mesh points. Now, of course, you have an offset in front, which could be huge for one or the other scheme, so you have to beware. And also, Monte Carlo methods are very suitable for strange boundary conditions. Imagine you're having a box like this, and you're having a ball bouncing inside of the box. Now you want to simulate the gas pressure. And the gas is collisionless, but it collides towards the surface of the ball and surface of the cube. This would be very hard to implement using finite differences and finite elements. But it would be fairly easy to implement these boundary conditions with Monte Carlo methods. Now, of course, Monte Carlo methods are much more noisier than finite differences and finite elements. So, like I said in the beginning, it's not an easy choice what to use, and it's really problem dependent. If you look at the parallelization as well, it's very easy to parallelize Monte Carlo methods and particle methods in general, especially if you have a totally linear problem. You can see in the lecture note with the linear operator L, you can just move it out and you get linear operator on each particle and the sum of this. And this makes that you can run the simulations on several machines totally uncoupled and just take the average and get better results. Now, be careful about the seeding, because if you don't do seeding on the different machines, you'll have exactly the same random numbers and then exactly the same solutions. And also, if you do non-linear problems, for example, it will not scale very well, because then you will need a lot of communications between the machines. As for the exercises, we would like you to carry out this derivation of the time derivative of the expectation value and the time derivative of the variance for the advection diffusion equation. We also would like you to implement the periodic boundary conditions. And note here that the boundary conditions should be implemented so you can have advection speed, which is, for example, 3 times as big as the cell and times the time step. So it's not enough just to push them in if they go outside. You really have to push them all the way. Having said that, I probably said it too much and there is nothing left to figure out. But I also want you to do one of the last exercises where you could actually see how well a steady state will be represented by a particle method. And you can also see what the derivative of the diffusion coefficient will result in.